Hi, welcome to another episode of Drinks Break, the Nationals podcast talking all things cricket in the UAE. It's Wednesday, May 20th. I'm your host, John Turner, the web editor for sport here at the National. I'm joined today by Paul Radley, cricket writer and sports writer here at the National. Paul, how are you doing today, mate?
Very well, thanks, JT. Yourself?
Yeah, good, thanks. Not too bad at all. It's been a big week for UAE cricket, Paul, obviously with the big news came out in the last few days with the revelation of the introduction of central contracts. Now, just give us a bit of an idea of what this means for the cricket landscape in the UAE.
Yeah, they're still more or less in the pipeline and the planning, but Akib Javed said the other day that he hopes for the first sort of four or five central contracts to be handed out in January time next year, which is a pretty big thing, really, because for the first time in the country, they'll have proper professional cricketers contracted to the Emirates Cricket Board, who all they have to worry about is cricket rather than their day jobs. And that is quite a significant thing. When the UAE got full one-day international status by the qualifying tournament for the World Cup last year, Akib said that this should sort of shift the goalposts as to, you know, the professionalism of the national cricket team. And he said back then that he hoped to have 20 fully contracted players at some point in the future. The fact that they're introducing four or five perhaps signifies the fact that they're going to be learning as to the process, as to how they can implement it, how best to implement it, and how much they can afford, really. But it is a pretty good thing because it's the sort of first major step towards professionalism, which is going to be important if the UAE are going to maintain their place amongst the best cricket sides in the world and go to World Cups regularly and improve and challenge the next level.
Well, you mentioned that the seeds were sown when in the qualifiers and build up to the World Cup. You know, how important a role do you think their participation in the recent World Cup has been to getting all of this actually action greenlit and now now we're seeing it actually coming to fruition where central contracts are going to be awarded at the beginning of next year. Just how important do you think the World Cup has played in actually making this happen?
Well, it's crucial, really. The actual qualification for it was a very important bit because it unlocked a load of funding from the ICC in terms of higher high-performance grants and things like that. So it actually allowed them, without necessarily the next step of generating their own funds through sponsorship and things like that, it actually allowed them to even consider starting to pay players and have them under their own steam. And the World Cup, it was pretty telling that the World Cup could have been like a means to an end. The UAE played it, they didn't win any games, but they performed admirably in a lot of the matches. And that could have been, you know, in the past, certainly in terms of 1996, that was an end point. Whereas it seems like now the World Cup was just sort of a part of a bigger process where cricket and sort of the high-performance elite level end of the game here really can grow and become more established and the UAE be more competitive as a result.
Well, as you mentioned, Paul, coach Akib Javed has said that they'll be looking to award around about five central contracts as a starting point. Now, what do you think how do you think these will be awarded and who, what are the sort of players will they be looking to do? What do you think the reasoning will be? Will it be a case of perhaps, I don't know, two batsmen, two bowlers and a wicketkeeper to try and essentially get a spine of players that you'll be looking to, be the bedrock of your side for the next few years and do it like that? Do you award it just simply to your best five players? What do you think the reasoning and the logic behind it will be once it comes to awarding those five contracts out?
I assume they'd absolutely love to be able to do it like that, but I imagine, certainly in the very first instance, the practicalities of sort of general employment of the players over here will be the utmost, the very basic sort of requirement as to picking the candidates, because if you look at the leading player, Karim Khan has been the best player for a decade for the UAE. He's an absolutely brilliant player. He has a very good job with Emirates, and he's 43 now. I'd imagine he's considering retirement pretty soon from the game anyway. So getting him on board and giving him a 1-year contract would be pretty pointless, and whether they could actually match his the wages that he's paid working with Emirates anyway, you'd imagine would be a little bit unlikely. The same would go for people like Mohamed Tourkeer, who's a captain, a little bit on the older end of the age scale, and he's got a good job in a bank. There are actually a lot of players over here who have cricket more or less as their main driver for them being here. And you'd have thought that the UAE would be talking to their employers and thinking about whether those sort of guys are the ones.
Which five players then do you think, in your mind then, Paul, do you think would be the guys that, as soon as this news kind of broke, you must have had a bit of a thought to yourself, thinking, these are the kind of guys that I think will be awarded them. Are there one or two, even three dead certs, maybe a couple of wild cards you think that might be awarded? Yeah. What's your initial thoughts?
Well, Akib did actually say three names straight off. So, he said that they're looking at guys like Shaiman Anwar, who's obviously brilliant in the World Cup.
Of course,
and his main source of employment over here is driven by cricket. Mohamed Naveed is a very good bowler, and he's mid-20s, so he's got a little bit of longevity. You can invest in his future. He's a quick bowler. He's excellent. And the other one was Swapnil Patil. He's a wicketkeeper who was also recruited to a staff position at his company over here on the basis of his cricket, but the staff team has since been shut down. So he's sort of at a loose end, so you'd have thought he'd be an ideal candidate for it. Other than that, the next couple, ideally they'd look at guys at the younger end of the age scale who aren't necessarily in full-time employment just yet after their studies. I'm not exactly sure what Chirag Suri does, but he's a guy who's come through the under-19 system. He's been named in the squad for the tour of Ireland. Good young batsman, good attitude. If they could look at having him on a central contract, I'd have thought he'd be a great addition. So that's four. And then after that, perhaps another young guy in that sort of vein. Maybe just somebody else through the under-19s, I suppose.
Yeah, fair play. Well, you mentioned just now, and we'll move on to the Ireland tour. That's obviously, you know, this news of the central contract has come at a really really good time, because they do have a big and heavy schedule coming up over the summer, starting of course with the fixture in Ireland, the Intercontinental Cup fixture. Now, just tell us a little bit about, you know, what will be, you know, the UAE are up against in Ireland, and the significance of the Intercontinental Cup.
Well, yeah, in Ireland they'll be up against the best team from this level of cricket, the team that's dominated sort of along with Afghanistan for the past 10 years maybe, and so as a result, in their home conditions, they're going to be a real tough assignment. But and the UAE haven't beaten them for donkey's years either, so it's a bit of a daunting one. But they put up a really good show. They drew with them last time they played with them, played against them in the Intercontinental Cup a couple of years ago in Sharjah, so that boosted their confidence. And also in the World Cup, they gave them a real good go.
Yeah.
In the game where it could have swung their way, they just dropped a vital catch at the wrong point and had Ed Joyce bowled out, and the bails didn't come off. So I think they're going to head over there pretty confident. But Ireland are very formidable. The Intercontinental Cup is a four-day competition, which obviously UAE play none of that over here domestically, and a lot of the Ireland players play counter cricket, so they're pretty used to it. So all the aces are with Ireland, but UAE have got nothing to lose by going over there.
Yeah, and also there's a big incentive for the overall winner of the Intercontinental Cup as well, isn't there?
There is, yeah, a one-off test match where if they win it, the ICC have mooted the idea that they might then join the test fraternity. I think there's a lot of water that's got to pass underneath the bridge before that ever comes to pass. But Akib actually said the other day that's miles off. That's just years and years and years down the line for UAE to even be thinking about it.
Sure.
But he did say Ireland deserve a crack at that anyway, because of all they've done over the years. He's very complimentary about Ireland, and for everything they've done for associate cricket, he thinks they're more or less ready for it and deserve a crack at that straight away anyway.
Yeah, well, and next up after the Ireland tour at the beginning of June, of course, just a month later, is then the World T20 qualifier. Now, that's more a situation where the UAE will have higher expectations and ambitions. Now, just run us through that as well. The UAE are placed in Group B alongside Afghanistan, Canada, Kenya, the Netherlands, Oman and Scotland. I'm right in saying that the winner of each respective group then qualifies directly for the World T20 and then the second or fourth place go into playoffs. Now, what do the UAE expect of themselves heading into the World T20 qualifiers, Paul?
Yeah, like you said, it's a pretty convoluted qualification process. You can sort it out by just winning all your games and finishing at the top. That gets straight through. UAE will be targeting, even though they're in a pretty tough group, actually. You just read out the names there. That's definitely the harder of the two groups. They'll definitely be targeting nothing less than qualification, whatever position that comes in, so long as they get there. Anything less than that will be a backward step, because obviously they qualified last time to go to the next pre-qualifying competition in Bangladesh last year. So they'll definitely have eyes on qualification, and their confidence is pretty high, having played in the World Cup and with all the good news that's surrounding the central contracts and things like that. And the national cricket team's got real buzz about it at the moment, so they'll definitely be positive of their chances heading over there.
Well, I mean, realistically, in that group, as you said, you're probably looking at, Afghanistan and Netherlands fighting out for first, and then probably the UAE and Scotland, you'd really expect to be kind of leading the charge to kind of look towards the higher end of the playoff places. I was looking at how it all kind of works. I'm still a bit confused to exactly what the UAE need to do. If they end up in the playoff places, how do they then go from a playoff place in their group to actually a place at the World T20? It's quite a confusing process.
Yeah, unusually for cricket.
It's
a convoluted process. All they got to do is not worry about that sort of thing and just worry about winning all their games. It's pretty good, actually, that they've got a nice long tour now to the UK. They play a warm-up match for their four-day game against Ireland. They have a three-day game against Scotland. So they're going to have a lot of time in those sort of conditions, which is pretty good, because obviously on the surface, tour of the UK, like Scotland and Ireland, where the matches are being played, wouldn't necessarily suit the UAE players, you wouldn't think. But I think they showed enough in New Zealand. Well, by the fact they qualified for the 50-over World Cup in New Zealand, I think they've shown that they don't need to worry about that anymore. And just in terms of their rivals, I think certainly Scotland and Afghanistan, two teams who played in the 50-over World Cup, they'd be tough sides to beat in their group. And then for the Netherlands, it sort of depends what players they get from, Australian cricket, who they, certainly Tom Cooper, one of their better players, plays over in Australia, and whether they can get him released and playing. Obviously, it'll be off season, so you'd have thought they'd have a pretty strong side. Yeah, so they could be a real threat as well.
I mean, this is an unusually busy summer for the UAE side, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an unusually busy year, actually. Probably the busiest, definitely the busiest that UAE cricket's ever had. And leading players, if a player was to play in all of the matches, I think they'd certainly have at least 3 months off, just related to cricket this year, at least that. So that just goes to show why its central contracts need to be handed out as soon as possible.
Well, that's it. Exactly that. I was thinking the exact same thing. It brings us back to our original point, doesn't it? Now we've just discussed how busy their summer is, and it brings us back to the fact that, you know, what good timing it is to now, you know, consider and start introducing these central contracts to a core group of players and to give the UAE a really good foundation pushing forward and into the future of international cricket. Well, that's all we have time for today. This podcast was produced by Marwan Alhamadi and at the National Multimedia Desk. You can follow the National Multimedia Desk on Twitter at NSVUAE and stay up to date with everything from the sports section at NatSportUAE. Thanks for listening.